Yes, good morning. All got going with the Puppet, and I hope that you are enjoying Puppet. I think Puppet is one of the coolest things in the world because it's a programming language and we know how to program from studying 2 years, but it's a language made for system administration. So it's a dedicated language for the tasks we're going to do. And whether you're interested mostly in core system administration or core security, it's just as relevant because it's all about controlling computers. So if you want to deploy a bunch of stable computers and make sure they all are predictable, so you know that if one thing fails, then it's likely that another thing fails. If you want stability, we should have a very homogeneous environment with similar servers. You want to make sure that configuration stays the same, and doing all these things, Puppet is perfect for. But it's also perfect when you need to protect yourself. Like you probably experienced on Monday, at least I experienced, because I was going to update and do some changes in Fronter, and Fronter was not available. And then it came back up and it was partly available. Guess what was going on? What do you think was going on? Nope. Good guess. DDoS. Yes. Fronter were under attack. Distributed denial of service attack. Which everyone guarantee you will experience that. So sometimes when you're under attack, you need to quickly protect yourself. So but you need to cancel some services, you need to switch some IP addresses, you need to change a firewall rule. And if you're controlling all your servers with Puppet, you just do it through Puppet. That's why I really emphasize the use of Puppet in this course, because it's the most flexible and open tool for controlling computers. And where we are heading now is, so as I probably told you before, this course used to be a textbook course with a little bit of exercises in each category, your typical university course. We go through some theory, we read books, and do some exercises, a little bit. We touch on this, we touch on that. And then I've tried over the years to do this more and more practical. And then I realized that there is really one way to go. There's one thing you need to do to be, or one skill you really need to master to be a professional system administrator. And I saw in the readings we're going to do in 2 weeks have one of those readings has this quote. Let's see. Your roles and profiles modules are separate from your control repo, you end up having to push changes to, say, a class in the profiles module, then updating the Puppet file in the control repo, then trigger an R10K run sync. If things aren't correct, you end up changing the profile, pushing that change to the profile repo, and then having to trigger an R10K run sync. And if you don't have SSH access to your masters, you have to make it a dummy commit to the control repo, so it triggers an R10K run, or doing a curl to some endpoint that will update your Puppet Master for you. Was that at all understandable? It shouldn't be. Not at this stage. But this is where we're heading. This is what an experienced professional system administrator writes about what you should do. So this will all make sense in about 3 weeks. So I showed you this model last week, that a typical system administration course would give you a book with theory and then do exercises here. Little bit of Linux, little bit of Windows, little bit of this and that, how you manage software, use some tools, etc. But we really want to learn this entire stack because this is what scales. Whenever you want something to scale, you divide it into layers, or you think hierarchy. So how do you manage 1,000 hosts? Do you manage them by all host name? No, you turn them into host groups. Which hosts are similar, and you group things. When you group things, it scales. That's why you divide a book into chapters, and a chapters into sections. Always remember that. You want things to scale, think hierarchy, and think layering. So now you should be familiar with the concept of Puppet resources, the different resource types, user, group, file, package, etc., that you use in the Puppet language. So the goal of today is to move into modules and learn what modules are, because sometimes you write a manifest and you apply a manifest, but most of the time you will write code in terms of Puppet modules. You put all your Puppet code in modules as soon as you're going to deploy them on a larger scale. And then we'll move on to roles and profiles and the work process in the following 2 weeks. But this is where we stop before the midterm. So modules, and then about DNS and an infrastructure next week, and then the role profile, the highest level stuff, that we do not cover that on the midterm exam. Okay, this week I remembered to publish some sample solutions. First, I hope you all know now that, because the first week we only had the lab exercises, in the beginning we only had lab exercises. These are easy. These are a bit harder, but these are the ones that prepare you for the exam. So please, every week, remember, do the lab exercises first, then do the review questions and problems. And so there are some theory questions here which you do them the last. Focus on the problems, the hard problems in here. So for last week there were some three theory questions, typical exam questions, and also typical exam problems. I will ask you to write some small Puppet manifests. So, and for these five exercises, you will now find the sample solutions here. Here. But remember, it's just sample solutions. There's always more than one way to do it. If you think you've done something in a smarter way than my sample solution, which happens quite frequently, then feel free to send it to me and I'll update the sample solutions with a better suggestion if you have one. Okay. Yep. So I hope you saw I published these news, because when you're a software developer today, and remember, even though this is a system administration course, the world of today is DevOps. So development and operations hand in hand. So if you're doing system administration, you're also a software developer. And if you're a software developer as of 2016, you should be doing test-driven development on some level. So, and that's also part of the course description, that you should learn about testing in this course. So I updated the schedule and the content . I added two articles, how you set up testing in a Puppet module. You will read a little bit about testing in here as well, and hopefully some of you have read this material before today. So this is, there's a little bit about testing here as well. But if you want to do unit testing, if you want to run tests to see what Puppet will compile and put in your catalog, not test that it actually is doing it, but that it will get included in the Puppet compiled catalog and then will be attempted done, then you use RSpec Puppet, and how you set this up is here, and the language of RSpec Puppet is here. There's a little bit about testing in this video, and then there are three videos about testing, which all basically say much of the same things. They're not very long, like half an hour, and I've added notes to them. So watch these videos, read this, note there are no parentheses, meaning this is required reading for you. So you should know how to test and the concept of testing Puppet modules. But I will not ask you to write RSpec tests on any of the exams. Because the RSpec language, when I can't learn something easily over a weekend, then it's probably even a bigger job for you. Some of you probably learn it faster than me, but for the average student, it probably spend more time than me. And RSpec is a little bit hard, I think, to get into if you're not comfortable with Ruby programming from before. And I suspect that not all of you know Ruby. Some of you probably do, but we haven't had Ruby in this in Gjøvik in any of the previous courses either. So read about it, watch the videos, and read through this RSpec Puppet tutorial so you know basically what the language is like, but you don't have to learn the language. I think you have enough to do with learning all the other parts of Puppet. Okay? So that's the level I've set for how we should learn testing in this. When you get the sample solutions for the module you're going to write, that includes a test setup, and I'm going to show you how those tests are executed, but they're just a very simple setup. And whenever you create your default template for writing a Puppet module, setup for testing will be included. But very short, testing in Puppet is testing your syntax. It's testing that you're conforming to the style guide, which is known linting, which you know from other languages as well. It's smoke testing, meaning you run Puppet, but with dash dash no up. So just simulate what you're going to do. Then it's RSpec Puppet, which is unit testing of Puppet. There you actually write tests in the RSpec Puppet in the RSpec language with Puppet extensions. And when you do this test-driven development, what they say in some of these videos as well is that, you know, so the concept of test-driven development is that you know what you're going to do. The first thing you do is you write a test that will check what you're going to do. And then you run that test, and of course it will fail because you haven't written any code yet. And then you write just enough code so that the test passes. And then you're going to do a new task. And you write the test of the task first, and then you write just enough code so the test passes. That's the concept of test-driven development. You write the test first, and then you write just enough code for the test to pass. If you do it like this, you will get 100% test coverage. But this is theory. People don't do this in practice. You do it for some parts of your code. For instance, for Puppet, if you're going to test if Puppet actually is going to include the resource every time, that's really no point. You have to trust Puppet a little bit. So what kind of test should you write? You should write test that tests your logic. So whenever in your Puppet code you write any kind of logic where you make decisions, if it's on that platform, I do this. If it's on the other platform, I do that. No, whenever you introduce some kind of logic in your code, you should write a test for that code. But I said I'm not going to ask you to do this in this course, but this is one of the things that will, on the project at the end of the course, this is one of the things that will give you a high likelihood of getting an A on the project, is that if you include some testing. Okay, so, core video for today was was this video. As you probably see, there's almost all my videos are from the PuppetConf in 2014. This is, and most of the ones that you hear on the videos are employees of Puppet Labs. We have some other videos of other people as well. But Colleen, she describes quite fast, so it's just a half hour and covers basically everything about Puppet modules and how you do it, but very, very, very fast. And you have to read the articles in addition. But she also talks about testing throughout this. But this is the most important video. And by the way, Colleen, she's also, I think, still coordinating all the Puppet modules that they write for installing OpenStack. So like the way we manage our OpenStack, the Sky High Cloud, we manage it by, and we have deployed it using Puppet. So Puppet controls our entire OpenStack installation. And we use the official OpenStack Puppet modules for this. And she's the one coordinating and being in charge of those modules. So she starts with what is a Puppet module and all these things. And so if you haven't watched this video, do it and pay especially attention to these items covered in the video. Even though these lists are bullet points, maybe they should be ordered. So this is the most important. This is probably the best video for test-driven development. This other video is a little bit more high level, but you should also watch this because this is Gareth Rushgrove. And he Gareth, he edits and publishes a weekly email newsletter called DevOps Weekly. And if you think this is interesting, I strongly recommend that you subscribe to this. This gives you like a quick overview of big events in DevOps with just as much focus on ops as dev. And this is a really, really interesting newsletter to read. This is one of the few newsletters that I browse every week. For anyone here, subscribe to Bruce Schneier's Cryptogram. No? That's also, that's a monthly newsletter, but that's also a very nice newsletter to subscribe to. This. Cryptogram newsletter from Bruce Schneier that also summarizes all the hot topics in security from the last month. Okay. So, the example testing of the Puppet module, I think I'll move that to next week. No, wait, I can cover it now since we have... So when I give you the sample solutions next week, in the README file, this is what I set up to do unit testing of the Puppet module. I didn't write any tests, I just included the default test that the class exists. So this is just a setup so that you could start writing tests if you want to. And when you create a module, if you've read the documents, you know that if you're going to create a module, don't start by creating directories. Use the Puppet tool, Puppet module generate, and it will create a template. It will create all the directories that you should have with some sample files, so you can just get going. So creating a module, you do Puppet module generate, and then the name of the module. And as part of this, you get a directory, examples, with an example file of how you can use the module. So this you can use for smoke testing and syntax checking. And you get a spec directory. This is where you put your tests. And they have two files here, which include some tests. And then you get a gem file and a rake file, which is these things from the Ruby world, the gem file. A gem is a software package, similar to Apt and RPM and MSI and this, but in the Ruby world. And a rake file, that's Ruby's version of a make file. So if you want to do syntax checking, you would do Puppet parser validate, like this. If you want to do smoke testing, then you have to make sure that you sort of have a complete code base to see what would happen. And this this module depends on these two other modules, so you have to install them. And then you do a Puppet apply. You have to include the module path, like this. But the thing is, you say minus minus no operation. Just simulate what would happen. And in some cases, this will fail, because one thing in your Puppet code relies on something else being created, and if you do a minus minus no op, nothing gets created. So you have to be aware that sometimes this will fail, but there's a reason it fails. There's nothing wrong. It's just that you can't smoke test and get a good result all the time. Okay. So that's... That's smoke testing, syntax checking. If you want to do unit testing, you have to use this Puppet setup, Ruby setup. So you do a bundle install. You can do a bundle exec rake minus T to get an overview of what you can execute then. Then you can do syntax checking with more comprehensively by saying bundle exec rake validate. You can do linting of all your code, saying bundle exec rake lint. And then for doing unit tests, you have to create a fixtures.yaml file, create a test environment, and then you execute all the tests you have in these directories by saying bundle exec rake spec. This will cause you to execute sort of in a limited context. You can also just say rake spec most of the time. Yeah. So, but as you see, doing the testing, this quickly becomes a lot of details. And if you're going to be a professional Puppet developer, you should learn all these. But in this course, I think it will take up too much of our time if we dig into all the details. But this is the basic gist of it, how you should do testing and read the documents so you know where to go when you need to learn it later. Okay. Lab exercises this week. So you need some kind of server. And we have this from before. Just reuse a heat stack and launch a server so you can log into the server. Install Puppet on the server, just run these commands, so you make sure that you get Puppet version 4. Because if you do apt-get install Puppet, you get Puppet version 3. And we want to try to stick with Puppet version 4. Then I have designed two exercises so to sort of demo both see how you use Puppet in practice, how you reuse code, and the power of Puppet, how easily it is to do things when you know how to reuse code. So just the point being, modules, usually you reuse other people's modules. Sometimes you write modules yourself, but most of the time you reuse other people's modules. And I told you here to install Puppet Lab's NTP module and SAS time zone modules. And the name of modules is author-module name. So SAZ is a username. Dash, and the module is called time zone. So if we install these modules and then create a manifest that looks like this, where I just say include NTP, and I say time zone. I can't say just include time zone. Well, I can do that, but then time zone gets set to whatever is default. So when you're going to use a module, if you're just going to use a module with all defaults, then you can just say include module name. If you're going to use a module but specify some parameters, then you have to do a class declaration like this, saying class time zone, then you can specify parameters. So I know that I want to do NTP, network time protocol. I want, you know, synchronized time. It's important to everyone. So, and the defaults for NTP are okay. So if I just say include NTP on a server, time gets synchronized. Everything is nice. But I want to be specific that the time zone on all my servers should be Europe Oslo. So if you create this small manifest, do a Puppet apply, suddenly time is synchronized and the time zone is set to Europe Oslo. So that's a simple example, just to see how you use Puppet and how you use Puppet modules, and to see that you can either include it with just defaults or by specifying parameters. Then the next exercise is to show you the power of Puppet. So how much code do we need in Puppet to do a complete WordPress installation? Because has any of you ever done a manual WordPress installation? Yeah? No, you have to install a web server, you have to install a database, etc., and do all the configuration, and it's quite a bit of work. But you know the Puppet language. So you could then start writing a module that does all these things. But you don't. You don't do that. So WordPress is basically MySQL, Apache or Nginx, and WordPress configuration, WordPress installation and configuration. And then you need to enable some, make sure that you have PHP bindings and a bunch of these things. But of course, everyone has done this. There are at least 10,000 good system administrators worldwide who have done this. So let's reuse the code from the best. And if we're lucky, they have written code in a good Puppet module and published it on the Puppet Forge. That's the website we all love. Forge.puppetlabs.com. Currently, there are, doesn't say so here, but yeah, 4,417 modules are here for you to reuse. But as always, be skeptical. So choose the ones you reuse carefully. You don't know what all of these do. Some of them include a bunch of functions. So in a Puppet module, you can write functions that extends functionality. And that's probably written in a lower level language. And we really don't want to inspect all the details in absolutely all the code in these modules. So you search for a module you need, and then you look, you look for trust. You can never have 100% security, but we always look for trust. Same thing when you install an app on your phone. What I suspect that all of you look a little bit at how many downloads, reviews, does it look like it comes from an official vendor? Is it a decent company? Etc. Same thing here. So if I want WordPress, there are 26 modules that do WordPress. And we see if I most downloads, if I sort by most downloads, that should never be my single criteria. Okay, there's a VGET module that mentions WordPress, which you see is downloaded 268,000 times. But this is not a WordPress module. But you see, it's Hunter's WordPress modules is clearly the most downloaded. And if you do a little bit of Googling, you'll see that this is probably the best one to use. But it's really not a perfect module either. Be prepared that there's a lot of modules here that aren't really that good. You very quickly get disappointed. So the first thing you should do is, does Puppet Labs have an official module for this? So Puppet Labs themselves, they write a bunch of modules for all the most important, biggest tasks, and you can trust them. If you don't find one from Puppet Labs, and many of these from Puppet Labs, they are usually Puppet supported. You can go and browse them here. So if you want to install SQL Server on Windows, there's an official Puppet Labs module for that. So you should trust this as long as you download it from a location you know. And in your problem that you're going to solve, writing the module, you need this ini file and the VCS repo. And they're also from Puppet Labs. But when people contribute code and write really good modules, they can be approved. To be a Puppet Labs approved module means, among other things, that you have to pass the linting test. The code has to be nice, readable, have good quality, and you have to have a certain level of test coverage. Your module should include tests that tests the main logic of your code. So when you see a Puppet approved module, you know that that code has some decent quality and it's probably at least those are safe to reuse. So you can see the list of Puppet supported, the ones from Puppet Labs. You can see the list of Puppet approved, etc. So Puppet Labs, they have 41 modules, for instance. So MySQL is that's everyone installs MySQL. So that's obvious that Puppet Labs, they have taken ownership of this module. They develop it, support it, because they need it. Because Puppet Labs, they give away almost all their code. They have an enterprise version which you can buy, so you get some nice web interface and you get some big data analysis and these things. But they make most of their money by being consultants. So most of the people you listen to on the video lectures, they are consultants at Puppet Labs. They do this for customers. They use these modules themselves and they support these modules. So when you find the module that you're going to use, then just go to the web page and view the README. Here is always an example of, so how do I do this? Well, I install the module, and if I want to install a MySQL server, this is the code I use. So you find it all in the READMEs. Be aware that sometimes the module that's published on the Puppet Forge can be out of date. So also pay attention to this link, project URL, because the actual code of the module is, where do you think the code is? Where do everyone publish their code today? GitHub. The code for this module is most likely on GitHub. Everyone does that. You know, Microsoft, I think Microsoft now have released almost all their code related to PowerShell is on GitHub. So even Microsoft publishes all their code on GitHub now. Go to project URL, which probably brings you to the GitHub page, and you can see here the latest commits, the releases, and check whether there's a newer release than what is, because when someone commits and publishes new releases on GitHub, there's no automatic that this is updated on the Puppet Forge. So for Puppet Labs, they probably do this. But for other authors, check the project URL as well. Okay. So what you do, if you want to, you have a server, log into the server, install the modules you need. You need to install Puppet Labs Apache. You need to install Hunter WordPress. And I think Hunter WordPress will trigger a dependency that will install MySQL as well. If not, then do a Puppet module install, Puppet Labs-MySQL as well. And if you want to see which modules you have installed, you do a Puppet module list --3. That will show you your current setup of modules. Then you have to write this manifest. say node default, then I create two variables. This is something that we will learn later, but you probably know from studying computer science a couple of years that it's a good idea to separate code and data. We don't want to hard code stuff. We always joke among us teachers a little bit about, we had a very classical incident a few years ago with a bachelor group who did their bachelor thesis. This was back in 2001 where everyone was doing a bachelor thesis writing a web shop. Some kind of web page, usually some kind of web shop. And there was a group, we call it in Norwegian, we refer to them as gruppa som hardkoda frakten. So they wrote in their code that delivery costs were 100 kroner. It was hard-coded, there was no parameter or anything. No, because the employer had said that, well, they charge 100 kroner to send stuff by postal mail. So they developed a system where there were no parameter to change this. This was hard-coded in their solution that the cost was 100 kroner, because that's what their employer had said to them. Yeah, so you don't do that. You try to leave it as a variable and then set that in a configuration file or outside your code. And what you do in Puppet is that there's a database called Hiera where we try to put all the data. So whenever we need to have data into our module, like especially passwords, so when you install a MySQL server and create a MySQL database, you have to give a username and a password. And you don't want to put passwords into your Puppet manifests. So typical thing that you put in Hiera, and then Puppet do a lookup when needed. So that's why I've just... So here the password is put in Hiera, and the WordPress password is put also in Hiera, just to notify you that later we will actually put these in Hiera. But now I just state them here as variables in the beginning. So you see, this is using variables in Puppet. Then I install Apache with two parameters. I make sure that Apache's module for PHP is also installed. I create a virtual host for WordPress on port 80 with this document root. Then I install a MySQL server and set the root password to be this. I install PHP bindings for MySQL, and then I set up a WordPress installation which downloads, installs, and configures WordPress. But to do this, I have to first create the WordPress user. So I create the user, and then this class declaration uses the WordPress modules, installs WordPress in this version. By the way, you can check WordPress. Maybe there's a newer version out. When I created this exercise 2 months ago, 4.5.3 was the latest version. But maybe there's a newer one. And I say it should be installed with this user. And I should not execute this before Apache is installed, MySQL server is installed, and the user WordPress is created. So I do require these classes and resources first. So when this is installed, then I can install WordPress. So but this manifest, so whenever you need to set up WordPress on a server, all you have to do is this. Just run these commands and Puppet will do all the work for you. And this is what really saves you time and causes you to earn money. Because you're automating things. You're doing things in a smart way. You're doing powerful things without wasting your time. And then your employer will guarantee you pay you a lot of money to do this. So you now have the recipe for setting up WordPress. It takes you 10 minutes max. And you can do it in 30 seconds when you have done it once. So, okay. Yeah, I think I have about 20 minutes left to talk, but let's take a 15-minute break and then move on to the real problem. Yes. Okay, so as I said before the break, these two exercises are for you to learn how to use modules. A simple exercise and a bigger one where you see some more, where you see use of modules combined with creating native resources. So, you know, this is using modules that you install, and then you have some native Puppet code for creating a user, which you need for the WordPress installation, including dependencies. And so here you should now have enough examples and enough Puppet code. Then you're going to write your own module. And if you have time, try to doing these lab exercises should be quite quick. That's just copying and pasting the code and applying it. And then if you want to test that you get access to the WordPress installation, of course, you have to have a floating IP and then set up dynamic port forwarding so you can go to that IP, the floating IP in your web browser. So try to do that, if you have time, try to do that today, so that we can spend tomorrow on this exercise. This is the important one. Make sure you have read this beginner's guide to modules, and that you have done a little bit of, that you have done the exercises so far in Puppet. So the exercise is to write a Puppet module, Goscinny Backup, which installs and configures the code from this GitHub repository. And the module should have the following parameters. I also link to the same ones that are in front of here. So based on the beginner's guide and the module fundamentals, you should, there's an example for how the Puppet Labs NTP module is constructed. So use that example and build your own module. That might be a bit scary. Anyone scared? Do I scare you? Okay, a couple. Don't be scared. The thing is, think as you always do when you program. You know, while not hungry, I think that's the... Then code a tiny bit, then test. You know, this is your development loop. Don't try to write the entire module. Write just a notice, hello, and see that you can apply the test example and that your module setup works. Then add a little bit and test, you know, and do this. Always code just a little bit, test. Do not try to write 100 lines of code and then compile and run it and try to then debug it. That's a nightmare. A little bit at a time. Write clean, nice code. Use proper indentation. Use the Puppet lint to help you write and follow the style guide. It will tell you if you're not... Puppet is based on hash rockets. What is a hash rocket? Yeah. This is a hash rocket. So, like, one thing you have to do, you should align your hash rockets so that your code looks nice and is readable. And the linter will tell you if you do not align your hash rockets. These kind of things. So just code a little bit at a time. And I don't know if you experienced this, but I once, when I was a student, I shared a house with the three other students, and one of the other students, he got big problems with his health because he didn't eat, because he kept coding and coding, and he, yeah, I'm getting hungry, but now I'll write some more code. And he actually got real health problems from not eating properly. So, because when you start programming in these things, you probably, you know this, then it's very easy to get very engaged, and suddenly the day passes by, and suddenly you're extremely hungry, and then you throw down twice or three times as much pizza as you should, and drink way too much Coke instead of eating salad and drinking water. Okay, so read this. You should create the following classes. This is the typical structure that you will read, same as NTP. You have a top-level class, and then you separate out a class for parameters. This is your API to your module. So think of your module as a self-contained, reusable component. So other people should be able to take your module, download it, and just provide parameters through an API. And that's what I showed you with the time zone module. Set Europe Oslo as time zone. So this file should define your API to the module. The only thing other users should need to give information to your module. Your module, when you write a module, it should, if anyone else is going to reuse it, it should be, they should not have to change any code. They should just have to provide parameters to your module for it to be reusable. So think in those terms. And then you usually separate the installation procedure and the configuration procedure into separate classes. And these, it's very easy. These are four files. Each class in one file. This one should always be in the init.pp file. This should be in the params.pp file, the install.pp file, and the config.pp file. And notice the namespacing. So if you would have a complex configuration, so you would like several files to do configuration, and this should be in a configuration directory, the syntax would be config, which is also a directory name, colon, colon, and the file name, without the .pp. So there's a clear link between the class names and where Puppet will look for that class. So when you in your manifest call a Goosin backup config, if you call that directly, there should be a file in the manifests directory of your module called config.pp. If you call config colon colon myinstall.pp, I'm sorry, if you call colon colon myinstall, there should be a directory in the manifest directory called config, and in that directory there should be a myconfig.pp file with the myconfig class. So notice that's the namespacing. That colon colon, think of that as a directory separator. So there's a direct link between the class name and the file name. So your job is basically to do Puppet module generate and the module name and create these four files. But Goosin backup is not included in the file name. This should be in the init.pp, which is the default file, and then there should be a file params.pp, install.pp, and config.pp. Your module should depend on the Puppet Labs VCS repo module and use it for installing the script by cloning the repo on the GitHub. So Goosin backup, that's what I mean by the script. And your module should depend on the Puppet Labs ini file module and use it for editing the configuration file. And the simplest possible use of your module should be like this. So if someone else installs your module, they should be able to just say this in a manifest. Declare the class Goosin backup, and I should backup this directory to this destination directory. And if I do this, then the goes in backup, software is downloaded, installed, and configured, and suddenly you have a working backup system. So this is really important. So I'm going to demonstrate this a little bit for you. Firstly, this. So if you do this manually, so the task we're automating, that's the, you know, the goal of this entire course is how do you automate and scale. Anything you do manually, we want to automate it in a professional way so we can reuse it and it can scale to thousands of computers. So if you were to do this manually, this is how you would install it. We download it. We put it in a directory where the executable script, and it has a separate configuration file in the same directory. There should be a file that lists all the file patterns that should be excluded from the backup. So there's a script with a configuration file and an exclude file, and then you have to know that the source of exists and the destination to copy to the backups. And then you add a Krontab entry like this, for instance. So on Linux servers, Kron is the service that executes tasks on a regular schedule. So if I want something to execute every quarter past the hour and every quarter to the hour, so 15 past the hour and 45 past the hour, every day of the week, every month, every year, something like this. So I would just have a line like this in Kron. So that's our goal, create a module that installs, basically does all these things, but do this with Puppet code. So when you have created this module, here I am on a new server, and you see in the op directory, this is a new server, I've just installed Puppet. So I've done the first two parts of the lab exercise. I have a server where I have Puppet. So what we need to do then, so a backup script. I need to have a destination to copy to. And remember, should I to create a destination to copy all the backups to? Does that sound like something that should be part of the module? Or, okay, where's my backup destination? Maybe it's just a directory in the tree. Maybe this directory should be on a separate network-mounted file system. So where you store your data, that's probably something you should do outside your module. So if in doubt, try to keep your module simple. Don't be afraid that you will then push something to manual work. That should be part of another module, probably. The module that uses your module. So, if I'm going to put this just in backups, then I have to create this. Yeah, I have to be root, of course. Let me create a directory where I can put my backups. So the exercise says Your module should depend on Puppet Lab's VCS repo. So, you do a Puppet module install Puppet Lab's VCS repo. And if you're wondering, okay, so anytime I'm going to reuse Puppet code, I have to install all these modules. I have to do all this stuff manually. Don't worry, we're going to automate and control all of this later as well. That's part of the big workflow, is controlling all your modules and their versions. Because you want to make sure that you have a stable environment. So for now, we just install this manually. Puppet Lab's VCS repo, because the Puppet Lab's VCS repo, and for you to solve this exercise, you have to go to the README page and see how you can use this module to install software from GitHub. So Goosin Backup is software on GitHub, and you can use one of the providers in here to quite easily install something from a Git source. So that's why we include this. We reuse that repo because it has the ability to install software from a Git repo. And then Goosin Backup has an ini file, a typical classical good old Microsoft DOS ini file, which is one possible configuration file syntax. And then there's an ini file module that lets us edit ini file entries. So that's why we reuse Puppet Lab's ini file. Also, you have to read about this module so you know how you can edit the ini file. Because we're going to use this module to download and install Goosin Backup. We're going to use this module to configure Goosin Backup based on the parameters that a user will give to the module. And then there should be the module itself should use a native resource type to create a cron task. Okay. And let's see. Yes. So this is my sample solution which I've downloaded. And this is what you will get from me at the end of next week. So this is the completed module. So I'm just going to show you how this should work. First of all, I now have Puppet module list 3. It should show me that I have these two modules. That's it. And the modules are here. This is where your Puppet code usually ends up, as modules in this directory. And this is what we also will cover later. By default, there's one environment and it's called production. So you can probably guess that later we're going to create a separate testing environment where we can first put our code into the testing environment, test our infrastructure, our testing host, that everything works fine, and then move it into production. So I have these two modules. Now I can... Hey, I don't have unzip. So I have to do an apt-get install unzip. Now I have unzip. So I can unzip this. But the module is called Goosin Backup. So let me just move this. Like this. So there's my three modules. My module, I created it with Puppet module generate. And that automatically includes Puppet Lab's standard lib as a dependency. That's why it says unmet dependency. But I don't think I really need it, so it doesn't matter. But you see, this Puppet modules list is a useful tool. Because before, trust me, before you know it, you have 100 modules. And it's very nice to get an overview of which modules depend on which have triggered installation of another module, etc. So you quite quickly you get 100 modules when you start doing things. So notice this command, puppet module list 3. Okay, so now I have my modules installed. Let me create just a script, backup.pp. Well, sorry, a manifest. So now I'm going to use it. Going to actually execute it. And I said in the exercise, simplest possible use of your module should be this. Here. I don't want to copy from the PDF. Let me copy from the the text file, the tech file. Okay. Will this work? I forgot one thing. All those things as well, but yeah, maybe do I have No, it doesn't complain about my syntax. Maybe it works, but I think you have to do... No, wait, let's see. Does it work? We can smoke test. It's okay. I thought maybe I would have to do this. But maybe I don't have to do that. Like this. That was what I was looking for, but maybe I don't have to do it. Believe it or not, but sometimes I'm wrong. Okay, let's try see if we looks okay. Let's see what happens if we apply this. So by the way, this message is just because this I haven't applied this fix. So Puppet compiles the catalog, and let's see what it does. Package that needed creates a repository. You see, I use the VCS repo method and that does some editing using the ini setting. And does some cron thing. And took 22 seconds. This is some of the downside here. Puppet is high level with all the benefits that that has, but it's slow. If you do a big Puppet configuration, it can easily take several minutes to run. I want to mention that if you're looking for configuration management on systems where you have to be computationally efficient, things have to be very fast and not take use more battery than needed, I would probably look for CF Engine instead. CF Engine is written in C, as much, much more efficient. So when if efficiency is important, probably CF Engine is a better choice. Okay, let's see what happened. Yes, Ghosting Backup got installed. And it has a configuration file. Which was edited. And there was supposed to be now a cron job which is executed. Let's see. By default, default executed 2 times per hour every half hour, and cron jobs are placed in var spool cron cron tabs. Yep. See, this file was managed by Puppet and created this entry. So, let's see. There's nothing in there now. And we see that it's almost 11:45. So then we do like this, and then let's wait for 1 minute. No, I'm kidding. So, but you know, this is now entry. There should be a backup should be run then at 11:45, so we can go get back and see if that works. So that's the setup. So you should write this module based on this beginner's guide to modules. And by the way, when you log into Sky High, you will see that I'm actually running this system on Sky High. When you log in, you get a warning that you should back up your data. But you see that I actually have this backup system is running there. So I do a backup of all your files every hour automatically. This actually works now quite well. I had a bug in my previous version, but this system now works quite nicely, meaning it does incremental backups and rotation and deletes and archives. With I showed you this file in the those of you who are in the operating system course. But I had a bug in it when I showed you to it in this spring, which I fixed this summer. I've been a bit. So we see this like. Now we are at the latest backup was this one. And you see, these are the users that had some changed data in their directory during the last hour. So every hour of the day, I capture all the changes every hour as a backup. And then at the end of the day, I do a full backup of everything. So if you do lose some data on Sky High or you want to go back to a previous version, just contact me because with the permissions on this backup should actually be set so Root should be the owner and the only one to read in case you're infected with ransomware. That's, as I've told some of you before, that's sort of, I think, is the ultimate nightmare for us ordinary users from that perspective, is ransomware, where someone encrypts all your files. We really don't want that. But if we have a different user with read-only, with is the only one, so like if root is the only one who can write to this directory, and root does a backup of all your data periodically, then you can always go back and find your data in case you're infected with ransomware. But it should be root have write access, and then this is, it should be your username as the group that have read access. I should have fixed that. So you could have accessed your data and read it whenever you wanted it yourself without having to contact me. Okay, and then let's go back here. Yeah. See, this was now run at 11:45. The goal of this exercise is that you learn the Puppet module structure with the best practice layout for example files, for testing, etc. Learn that the parameters is the API to your module, the params file, which is also part of this best practice. You will learn more about the Puppet language in practice using dependencies and ordering. You have to install something before you configure it, so you have to make sure that you get this ordering correct. You will need to inherit variables. You will use variables and namespaces. You will use an array. You will use function. You will use four different kinds of Puppet resource types. And you will learn to reuse other people's code, the ini file and VCS repo. And I also talked about how to choose the proper modules to reuse. The benefit of all the bad code on the Puppet Forge. Of those 4,000 plus modules, there's a lot of bad modules. You don't have to be a very big or a very advanced Puppet expert to see that there's a lot of things that you would like to change once you start using these modules. So why don't do it? All the code is on GitHub and everyone is busy. Someone has written an important module, published it. They do not have time to maintain it or extend it further. If you see something you would like to change, make a pull request on GitHub, you know, propose a change, do contributions, put it on your CV. This is the way to document for your employer that you're a professional system administrator. So if you see that there are some modules that you would like to contribute to, feel free to do so. Create a user for yourself on Puppet Labs. There are students who have done this before. And, you know, it just sometimes you see that, I did this on the, I think it was the Kibana module. I discovered an error just working, checking between Debian and Ubuntu, and just two lines of code, you know. And everyone is real happy if you contribute a little bit. So if you just contribute, you know, two lines of code, people are happy, you can put it on your CV. Any questions? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Of course. course it did. I wrote it. This was the first. This was the first run of the backup, and then the script checks that if nothing exists here before it's the first run, then it does a full backup. And I told to backup anything in home, and the only thing in home is Ubuntu. And the only thing there is this file. System D has a different. I did not know that, but I'm not surprised. I don't know. System D has. Of course, has taking over everything, so it's if that's one of the features of System D that seems to become widely used, then I would recommend do that. It might be that that's the modern right way to do it, and Kron is the old way and deprecated in some way. I'm very glad when you bring these things up. Because sometimes I try to keep up and be modern, but sometimes I do things old-fashioned. And if anyone is wondering, I started reading the TMUX cheat sheet yesterday. Because I know I should be using TMUX and maybe stop using screen. Yeah. It was nice, I did check on the Access VM just to list processes, and I see that the majority of you are using TMUX and not screen, so you are in that way more up to date than I am. So I'll start using TMUX as well. Okay, then see you all tomorrow.